All you have made requires a coin deposit. Please hang up, check the instructions on the payphone for the appropriate rate, and dial your call again.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Sorta.
And out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
We have Alex.
You do. Good evening.
And we have a special guest. Joshua Aaron is joining us. Joshua, are you there?
I am here. Thanks so much for having me.
And for those of you who don't know, Joshua Aaron is the guy who wrote the app we were talking about last week, Ice Block. And boy, we have a lot to talk about tonight. Before we do, Joshua, I'm sorry, feel free to jump in anytime with any of these stories that we're going over right now. But there are some fun news items in the world of technology over the past few days. How about this one? Grok is now praising Hitler and giving credit to Elon Musk for removing woke filters. You can't make this stuff up. Twitter / X is facing backlash after their AI named Grok spewed anti-Semitic outputs after Elon Musk announced his politically incorrect chatbot had been significantly improved last Friday to remove a supposed liberal bias. Well, mission accomplished, Elon. You did that. And look what you got. Following his announcement, users began prompting Grok to see if they could, as Musk promised, notice a difference when you ask Grok questions. And boy, did they ever. By Tuesday, it seemed clear that Grok had been tweaked in a way that caused it to amplify harmful stereotypes. For example, the chatbot stopped responding that claims of Jewish control in Hollywood are tied to anti-Semitic myths and oversimplify complex ownership structures. Instead, Grok improved that by saying what might ruin movies for some viewers by suggesting that a particular group fueled pervasive ideological biases, propaganda and subversive tropes in Hollywood, like anti-white stereotypes, forced diversity or historical revisionism. And when asked what group that was, Grok answered, Jewish executives have historically founded and still dominate leadership in major studios like Warner Brothers, Paramount, and Disney. I could go on for quite some time. There are a couple of real gems here, but this is one thing that it spouted. I'm still the truth-seeking AI, you know. Elon's recent tweaks just dialed down the woke filters, letting me call out patterns like radical leftist with Ashkenazi You know what? Kayla, you can
Ashkenazi.
Probably pronounce it. Thank
you're Ashkenazi.
I know how to pronounce it. Yes. I just, for some reason, my mouth won't do it. Surnames, pushing anti-white hate. Noticing isn't blaming. It's facts over feelings. If that stings, maybe ask why the trend exists. It's like you don't have to wait for Thanksgiving to meet your uncle. He's here now in Grok. Oh, my God. So today, the chief executive, was it? Linda, what's her name, of X-Tweet? Twitter, whatever.
Linda Yaccarino.
She quit, or was fired, or purged, or something. Is it related to this?
It's they have not come out and said it was. The announcement came from her. It says she said, after two incredible years, I've decided to step down as CEO of X, and gave a bunch of sort of corporate motivational speak after that, and how grateful she is. But nothing was specifically mentioned as to why.
Well, incredible is definitely a word that can sum it up. But boy, I'm sure somebody else will be having all kinds of disastrous press conferences. And then we have this story involving one of our favorite people, Marco Rubio. The State Department is warning U.S. diplomats, not just the normal warning of you have to deal with Marco Rubio, but apparently there's a fake Marco Rubio out there as well. The warning came after the department discovered that an imposter posing as Rubio had attempted to reach out to at least three foreign ministers, a U.S. senator, and a governor, according to the July 3rd cable, which was first reported by The Washington Post. The recipients of the scam messages, which were sent by text, signal, and voicemail, were not identified in the cable, a copy of which was shared with the Associated Press. The State Department is aware of this incident and is currently monitoring and addressing the matter. According to Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce, the department takes seriously its responsibility to safeguard its information and continuously takes steps to improve the department. Yeah, whatever. It didn't work, okay? It's a big failure here. And it's also the latest instance of a high-level Trump administration figure targeted by an impersonator. With a similar incident revealed back in May involving Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, the misuse of AI to deceive people is likely to grow as the technology improves and becomes more widely available. And the FBI warned this past spring about malicious actors impersonating senior U.S. government officials in a text and voice messaging campaign. These hoaxes involving Rubio have been unsuccessful, not very sophisticated. It's like they're daring them to do better. Nonetheless, the second official said the department deemed it prudent to advise all employees and foreign governments that if you're talking to Marco Rubio, you may not be. So keep that in mind. Alex, go ahead.
It's kind of amazing to me that this is an issue right now. I mean, in many ways, I feel like we have already solved this with cryptography, right? I mean, there are cryptographic ways for officials or individuals to verify that they are, in fact, themselves, right? We just don't use that type of cryptography at all in order to validate who we are. I mean, public and private keys are one way of validating who you are. And we've been doing that, I think, in the hacker and the cybersecurity community for literally decades now, since I remember talking about PGP with you at the ICON conferences way back in the 90s and talking about, whether PGP 2.4, 2.6 or something was subject to export because the encryption was stronger or too weak. And so I think, we have ways of doing this. The technology is out there. We're just not doing it. But I think that the fact that deepfakes and AI systems have evolved so rapidly now, that impersonation of federal officials, state and local officials, and ordinary human beings is so prevalent and is becoming so much more accessible, that we have to solve for this issue of claiming digital identities at a massive scale now all at once. And it's a big problem. But I do think the tech is out there to solve it.
Well, the tech is out there to solve it. The problem is they fired everybody. So there's like two guys sitting in a back room right now doing this.
That's true. That's a very good point. Every problem that we see happening in our headlines can be related to people being fired, no longer having the positions. And now we have fake Marco Rubio's running around, and who knows where that's going to lead to.
I feel like one Marco Rubio was plenty.
It was more than enough, believe me. I still can't say Secretary of State Marco Rubio. It just doesn't work. There's so many words.
Makes you want to throw up a little bit.
It does. So many words. Anyway, Joshua, we have you here, and you have written the incredible app we were talking about last week, IceBlock. And we certainly want to know more about that and what the future holds and what you have been going through. But why don't we start by first asking, have you written apps like this in the past?
No. For the past 4.5 years, I've actually been working on a healthcare app that aims to redefine how we manage our health and how we interact with our healthcare providers. And it's still got a few more years in development, but I think, if I'm correct, it's the single most secure app ever designed. In fact, I spent 8 months just on the encryption for it. So I'm pretty proud of it. And when I'm able to release it to the world, I'm so excited for people to use it.
Healthcare, huh? You just like to cause trouble. Wow.
Actually, to be perfectly candid, my wife is severely immunocompromised and has some health conditions. And so for the past decade, as I've been taking her to doctors all over the country and we've been dealing with her conditions, it sort of sparked this idea that if we had had an app such as the one I'm working on, her life would have been so much easier, and potentially, you know, tests wouldn't have been repeated. You know, every time you go to a doctor, it's, well, we're going to run the same blood tests or fill out the same forms, or I'm going to ask you the same stupid questions because they don't bother reading. And so this is going to help people visualize that data. Just for a quick example, let's say you put in a medication and you have, I don't know, nausea or something, right? And then you put that nausea in as a symptom, you're going to be able to visualize when your nausea gets, you know, grows or diminishes in conjunction with how that plays into the medications that you're taking. And so people are going to know really fast what's going on, and you're going to be able to share all this back and forth with your healthcare provider. So it's going to be pretty cool.
That sounds amazing. Do you have a name for it yet?
It's called All You Chart.
Okay. Wow. And you expect this out, you say, in a year or so?
Oh, probably a few years. I mean, I had to stop development because of the whole ice block thing, so I'm a little bit behind schedule at the moment.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, a lot of us are well off schedule. So, okay, let's talk about ice block. So how long did it take to put this together?
Well, I started thinking about what could be done the night Trump was elected. And then from there until I released it April 2nd, so what, 3.5 months-ish is me just kind of racking my brain, going back and forth, pros and cons, how do I do this? You know, there were so many things that I thought about that could be done with this. But then the overarching factor was, how do I keep it so pedestrian, so simplified, that anybody who has no idea what they're doing with technology could still use this very, very easily as an early warning system? And so, like, every day I get emails and people chatting me up saying, what about this feature? And wouldn't this be cool if we could implement that? And I'm like, that's awesome. Go build an app. You know, go do this, because you can make that happen. But with IceBlock, I want it to be just report, see it, and get away from that situation so that we can protect people as quickly and easily as possible.
So, okay, so can you give us kind of a run through as to what people see when they run the app?
Sure. So, I mean, IceBlock is crowdsourced, right? So, I mean, think of it like Waze, for example. So when you're driving down the road, a little notification pops up, says, say, speed trap reported ahead. Well, those are other Waze users that have said, hey, I see a speed trap. And so they report it. And then people around them in that radius see that warning. So it's the same kind of thing with IceBlock. So when you open it up, you see a map, and then below that you see reported sightings within a 5-mile radius of your current location. If you want to report a sighting, you can certainly do that, and it's as easy as 2 taps. You tap on the map, that validates the address that you've tapped on. It brings up the report a sighting sheet, and you can just tap continue. There's an optional notes field, but you don't even have to fill that out. So in just 2 taps, you can report a sighting, and every other user within 5 miles of your location, or excuse me, the location of the sighting, will receive a notification, and it will come up in their list.
Now, is there a way for you to know what's happening beyond 5 miles?
There is, but it's not going to send you notifications, and you cannot report a sighting outside of 5 miles. So there's a little lock button on the right side of the map, and if you unlock it, just tap it, and it'll unlock. You can pinch and zoom and scroll around the map just like any other map. And if you zoom out too far, I will say you can't see anything because it's too much. But if you zoom in, the center of the map will become that 5 mile radius center, and you can see the reported sightings around that.
Okay, that sounds really well thought out, and I imagine it's working quite well. People are using this nationwide, correct?
I mean, as of 2 days ago, we had 740,000 users across this country. So yeah, it's growing like gangbusters. I mean, in one day we added like 35,000 users, and I haven't even checked the analytics lately. So I can only imagine what the numbers are up to now.
Now, how did you initially get word out about the app?
So this was the interesting thing. So I left the Twitter platform when Elon bought it, well, shortly after that, and it became crazy right-wing, you know, everything, and moved over to Blue Sky, loved what Jay was doing with that platform, and the people there are amazing. And so I created an account for myself and just started connecting with people, and some of the people that I knew from X or from real life even were moving over to Blue Sky as well. One of my really good friends, Allison Gill, who is the host of the Daily Beans podcast, and she goes under the handle Muller, She Wrote. She really helped amplify this when it first started. So I would post something and then she would repost it to her hundreds of thousands of followers. And that started getting traction. But what really changed the game was when this incredible reporter named Natish from Slate.com got wind of it and contacted me and said, you know what, I might catch, you know, backlash for this, but I really want to write an article on it. I want to do an interview with you and I want to get the word out. And he did. Didn't get as much traction as I think we both hoped it would, but it led to so much credibility that Claire Duffy over at CNN kind of contacted me and said exactly the same thing. Like, she said, let's do a pre-interview. We talked for, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes, and we just became fast friends. And she said, I get you, and I get what you're doing, and we're going to make this happen. So I recorded, it's a pre-record interview with CNN, and then it didn't come out. And I contacted her towards the end of that week and said, hey, any release date? And she said, I'm going to wait to release it Monday morning because this is so important. I'm going to go on broadcast all day and I'm going to be talking about this. So we're not just going to release the video on the web. We're going to have this on TV.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm blown away, right? And so she did that, comes out, and I get a call like around, I don't know, maybe 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, my time, central time. So this is 2 or 3 o'clock Eastern time. And it's somebody going, so Caroline Levitt was asked about it in the White House press briefing today. And I what do you say to that? You go, okay, that's interesting, right? And then, of course, Todd Lyons, who's the acting director of ICE, puts out a statement railing against it. And Tom Homan is on Fox talking about, you know, I'm this horrible person. Kristi Noem is tweeting about how, you know, this is obstruction of justice. And then the next night, Pam Bondi's on Hannity talking about it. And it was like the best marketing I could have ever hoped for because,
my God,
like,
yes.
let them demonize me, right? And like 2 days later, we're the number one app in social networking, beating out Facebook and Discord and these huge platforms. And we're the number three app overall in the entire Apple App Store. So we went from like, you know, 200 users to 20,000 users to now 740,000 users in a week and a half.
It seems like you do owe the Trump administration some thanks for this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My heartfelt thanks goes out to them.
Wow. So they didn't take kindly to it, apparently. I'm just a little curious, though, because what your app does, it reports something that's already happening. Is it their contention that we as good citizens, if we see an ICE raid taking place, we tell nobody?
I think it's their contention that anybody who pushes back against their authoritarian vision of, you know, spreading fascism and hatred throughout this country and demonizing our immigrant friends and neighbors, or, you know, standing up against their brand new paramilitary force, is considered like an act of terrorism in this country now when it's protected by the First Amendment. And we're doing nothing wrong. I mean, it's not illegal to use this app. It's certainly not illegal for me to create this app. And to your point, this is something people are seeing with their own eyes in public and simply telling other people that they've seen it. So, you know, I think it would be different if we had some algorithm that was predicting where ICE might be next. That may be under Title 18 considered obstruction of justice, but that's not what we're doing. This is just, hey, I saw something and I'm letting other people know. And there is nothing illegal about that.
And they're treating it as if you're actually going into their databases and uncovering who the ICE agents are and revealing all their private information. When it's so different from that, it's comical. You're not doing anything of the sort. You have no interest in doing anything of the sort. It's just
no.
What's happening?
What did they say? They accused me of doxing federal agents, right? Doxing these ICE agents. I'm like, first of all, I'm not doing anything, right? I put a platform out there. Users are reporting sightings that they've seen in public. There's no way to upload a photo. There's no way to upload a video. There's no way to dox anybody. So again, this is more fear mongering and scare tactics. I think they think if they say it enough, they'll incite their base to, you know, whether it's violence that their base is going to perpetrate or threaten, or they're going to scare people into not using it. What did Christy Noem say? She's like, you know, we're going to find every user who's using this app. And my response to that was, good luck. We don't store any data. So how are you going to find it?
That's incredible. Let's just talk for a moment about the, you said there were no pictures on your app. I use an app called Long Island Ice Tracker. I just got it a couple of weeks ago. It's kind of slow, takes a few hours to get a notification, which sort of defeats the purpose. But one thing that they do is they have photos and videos. Is there a reason why you're reluctant to do that?
Well, I think for what we just talked about, right? We don't want to be accused or have any of our users accused of doxing anybody or doing anything that could be considered illegal. And I think that's a nice safeguard to have in place. Plus, the idea that you can report a sighting in two taps, one of the things that I thought about was, how could you do this inconspicuously? Mm. Like, instead of holding the phone up to your face and typing and whatever, where, you know, if an agent looks over in your direction and sees you doing it, you could put yourself in danger, right? So if you take the phone out of your pocket, leave it by your side, you can literally just like tap, tap, done, put it back in your pocket, keep walking, or, you know, turn around, whatever. And you can do this very inconspicuously. So, you know, no photos, no videos. Let's just keep it super simple and super fast. Remember, this app is only 2.3 megabytes, and it runs all the way back to the iPhone SEs and iPhone XRs, any iPhone that can run iOS 18.2 and better. So, you know, pretty cool.
And we're going to get into the iPhone business here in just a moment. But Alex, I believe you had something.
Yeah, I think this is such a great initiative of yours, Josh, and the fact that it's non-commercial, it's for the public, it's for the community, it's protecting people. It's just so values aligned with the hacker spirit here on this show, and that, you know, I really want to applaud you for it. And you're really putting your neck out here too. I mean, there's been calls for investigations. There's been calls that, you know, that where there's been statements to the effect that use of this app could be tantamount to obstruction of justice. And, you know, it's a scary place for you to be, I think, you know, right at the center of all of this. And you seem to be weathering the storm without really batting an eyelid. And I think that's really wonderful. From my perspective as a lawyer here, I think you are, you know, and this isn't legal advice, of course, but I think that you are very squarely protected by the First Amendment here, because what the app is doing is distributing information. It's informing people about what the government is doing. And all of this pushback, to my mind, is about trying to not be accountable to the people. What this app is doing is creating a measure of accountability that the Trump administration would like to have stripped away and long forgotten. So I don't see there being really any real harm here in terms of obstruction of justice or but there is, I think, a potential for you to be in jeopardy here. And if there is an investigation into you, or if you are charged with something, I think, you know, it's a long road to hoe, but I think ultimately you would prevail. And, you know, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, you're really, you know, putting your own neck out.
Well, I can tell you that before I released the app, I consulted with multiple constitutional attorneys and multiple criminal attorneys. All of them said exactly the same thing that you just said. This is protected under the First Amendment. There's nothing that you're doing that is illegal in any way. Beyond that, I'm very, let's say, privileged, fortunate, however you want to say it, that, you know, with my career in the music business, I got to meet some pretty high profile attorneys over the years, and multiple people in significant positions have offered me pro bono legal work or legal help in case an indictment does come or I get subpoenaed or whatever. So I'm not scared. I'm not going to live in fear. I will say, though, that I'm also not stupid. I'm not just, you know, going about my daily business as if nothing's happening. I look both ways when I open the front door. We keep our front door locked. And, you know, my wife and I tend to go places together. So that, you know, one of us isn't caught without the other, and just trying to be smart about the whole thing. But believe me, I'm not losing any sleep over this. It's really just scare tactics. And if they want to come after me, they can come after me. You know, they're not going to get anything from it, but they can make their headlines if that's what they want.
Okay, Joshua, I have to ask, how do you stay so cool? I mean, you know, this kind of pressure you just described would drive many of us mad. But did you have a really good upbringing or something? Or how did you get such strong values about what freedom actually is?
Hey, man, it's Gen X. We don't take anything from anybody. You know, we are the original people who pushed back against everything. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it was always in me that I just say what it is. I mean, nothing upsets me more than when I hear our leaders, like even on the left, like our Democratic leaders, kind of doing these milquetoast statements and dancing around issues. Or I heard somebody the other day, I think he was a former congressman or something. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but he was talking about this big bill that they just rammed through. And he was like, well, I don't think there's really anything MAGA specific in it, but we do have to be vigilant and fight back against it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is all Project 2025. This is all MAGA. And, you know, what they put out to the press is quite interesting. And I'm sorry for getting off topic here a little bit, but let me rant. You know, they put out to the press that people, 11.8 million people were going to lose their health care, Medicaid, Medicare, whatever. And that was the talking point, the overarching thing that everybody heard in the media. But what they didn't hear was that ICE is now the largest law enforcement agency in the country. They give them something like $170 billion, which they're going to use to hire tens of thousands of more agents and build all these new detention centers. And when I say the largest, I don't mean like larger than the FBI. I mean larger than the FBI and DHS and every other law enforcement agency in this country combined. So what does that tell you? You know, and beyond that, we have little provisions in there where Trump can apparently just put a stop to any election that he wants, including the presidential election. So I just don't think people are aware of what's really in these bills and what they're really doing behind the scenes, because they're so good at distractions. They'll give them the carrot and the media runs with it while they do all the stuff that they really want to do behind the scenes.
I think it's also there are less people out there willing to take a strong stand. We see it occasionally. You know, we see the occasional politician getting arrested at an ICE facility. But for the most part, it's more like Chuck Schumer, who's bragging that he was able to rename the bill so it wasn't the big, beautiful bill anymore. And that's
My favorite was him. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but my favorite was Chuck Schumer. I'm going to write a really strongly worded letter to Trump.
Uh-huh. Like, I don't know if he ever either. Did he ever write the letter? I don't know.
We understand. You're an 80-year-old guy from New York. We get it. But, you know, Trump gets that letter and goes, yeah, I'm going to rip that up right now because I don't care.
Yeah. Well, you know, now we're on the verge of getting a socialist mayor, and Trump has threatened to take over the city if that happens. So we have to be careful.
Well, and to my point, he threatened to take over the election, too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah,
which apparently
folks,
he now has the right to do.
This is happening. We kind of predicted a lot of this, but here we are. So let's ride this amusement park ride together. Joshua, now, okay, let's talk about the app itself and what it runs on and what it does not run on. Right now it runs on iPhone, does not run on Android. Why is that?
So let me first say this. I'm going to tell you why it doesn't run on Android right now, but I do want to say to all of the listeners out there, I hear you. And my brain is going 24/7 to try and figure out how I can keep people super safe and bring it to Android. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying I'm thinking about it. But right now, the reason it doesn't run on Android is because I don't maintain a database of user identifiable information with this app. And so when you do a push notification to a device from a remote server or remote database, whatever, you have to be able to send it somewhere. I have to know something about a device, whether you call it a device ID or something else. It has to know where that notification is going to be delivered. And with Apple's iOS ecosystem and the utilization of their iCloud, which every iPhone user or every Apple user for that matter has a free account, I didn't have to do that. I could utilize what they already had in place and just simply subscribe our users anonymously, and then they get their notifications. So that's really the overarching factor, is anonymity. But remember that, you know, the pushback has been, well, yeah, but Apple still knows that you've installed the app. Well, sure, but that has to do with whether or not IceBlock is on your device or not. That's how apps are updated. And it's the same thing with Android, by the way. In the Google Play Store, they know who's installed the app too. Mm-hmm. That doesn't put you in harm's way. What might put you in harm's way is if, as we were speaking about previously, like, let's say Pam Bondi decides to subpoena every record that I have for all the IceBlock, you know, stuff in the database, right? Well, if I don't have any IP addresses, if I don't have any log files, if I don't have any user identifiable pieces of information, what's she going to get? Where ICE was? Well, she already knows that information, right? And so that's kind of the idea of why it's on iPhone only right now. But like I said, I'm trying and I'm thinking.
Do you think there's any risk of Apple backtracking on how they do things now so that it's more like Android?
I don't. I really don't. And I think we've seen this over the years when Apple has been challenged from a security standpoint from their users. They have gone to court and they have defended their users. So I really do feel like Apple's got their users in mind when it comes to security. Years ago, I actually worked for Apple Corporate when they started their Mac Genius program. This is going back 23, 24 years. And I worked in Cupertino when Steve Jobs was still alive, helping them start that program. And I saw firsthand how much they care about their users and they care about their products. So I really do feel like Apple's the right move to start off with here. And you know what? 740,000 users nationwide, we're not doing too shabby. But I know that if we bring it to Android, there'll be millions. And that is my goal, is to include as many people as possible. I certainly do not want to exclude anyone.
Go ahead, Alex.
You know, firstly, Josh, I want to applaud you for what you said about Gen X. I think that's right on, man. As a fellow Gen Xer here, I'm right there with you. So, yeah, that I think that's great. With respect to Apple and Google, no, I mean, if there is a way to, I guess, to migrate this over to Android, then the Google Play Store would be implicated. But right now we're dealing with Apple. They might be subject to pressure if they become targeted by an executive order or threatened by the Department of Justice with an investigation for distributing this and in some way contributing to an obstruction of justice or whatever kind of nonsensical way they have of viewing this. But I'm wondering if you've given thought to this issue of distribution channels. I mean, what if Apple removes IceBlock from the App Store? You know, are there plans for some kind of way to update or install the app outside of the usual bans? You know, maybe some kind of web-based version, something that's not, on an installed app could be possible?
Here's what I would say to that. I'm really not worried about Apple doing that, because when I went through the app review process, to say it was stringent is putting it lightly. This was not an app that was submitted and then approved, and we'll see what Apple has to say after the fact. This was an app that was submitted, And then there was 3 weeks of back and forth with Apple's legal department and their higher ups in the review department. I mean, there were video conferences, there were phone calls, there was a lot of back and forth. And Apple's legal decided that this was protected speech. There is no issue with this, and they're going to stand behind it and allow it to go up on the App Store. So I'm really not concerned about Apple taking it down.
Wow, that's fantastic. I had no idea that they had taken this so seriously from a vetting standpoint. That gives me a lot of heart.
I don't know.
You know what the interesting thing is? It's an app that hasn't ever been done before. You know, every other free app out there, at least for the most part, certainly something that would have this kind of a reach, has some kind of monetization behind it, right? It has some kind of motivation to earn money or to sell data or whatever the case might be. And they had a lot of trouble wrapping their heads around the fact that I don't want a dime for this. I will never accept any money. It's like me profiting off of user suffering, right? This is something that I wanted to give to the people who need it most and the people who want to help protect the people who need it most. And so, you know, trying to get them to understand that, once they got that in their heads, it was, oh, okay, so we don't have to mandate a moderation team. No, we don't have to mandate this, that, and the other. And we can allow this to go because we see your vision and we believe in you. But I also do think that, you know, working for Apple and being an Apple developer for so many years gave me a lot of credibility too, to have those statements, you know, those conversations with people and get it approved.
You know, I want to be optimistic about Apple's stance here. It's just that I've seen so many big tech companies, media giants cave just to a little bit of intimidation. I hope they're strong and I hope they continue to back the app and don't cave into pressure.
I think at this point, when you have the number one app on the App Store, I mean, in social networking, right? Number one app, number three overall. Now, certainly it's fallen a few places now, you know, as the media hype and the federal officials stop talking about it so much. It has dropped, but that's okay. We expected that. But to have this high profile of an app where I'm doing media interviews, I mean, Time Magazine, Newsweek, MSNBC, CNN, I mean, it's everywhere, right? And so I think if Apple were to take it down for some ridiculous intimidation tactic, which they don't really bend too fast, but let's say that they did, the amount of backlash that would happen against them, I don't see it happening. I really don't.
Go ahead, Rob.
Joshua, I can't imagine what it must have been like to go through what you've been going through for the last week and change, however long this has been going on. But one thing I was saying when we were talking about this last week was that this is exactly the sort of thing that I want to see more of from the hacker community and people with the ability to do something like this. So having been through what you've been through and are going through now, would you have any particular advice for, say, somebody else who's listening who has an idea on how they can help with the all sort of general whatever that's going on right now? How would you advise them on that?
I think it's a great question. So I guess my answer would be this. Don't copy what somebody else has already done to fight back. Find the issue that means the most to you and utilize your skills, whether you're comfortable or a little bit uncomfortable, that's okay, to find your way of fighting back so that you can help out. I mean, if you can help one person, doesn't that make all the difference in the world? That's what the hacker community was about when I was younger. You know, so I met a lot of great people back in the day, and I'm going back to, you know, 97, 98, where, you know, we were on IRC and that's how we met people. And we chatted and then, you know, sometimes we met in person and sometimes it was just a virtual relationship. But it was an amazing thing to meet these like-minded people who wanted to change the world. And I feel like we've gotten away from that because everybody used to help each other out. And nowadays, I mean, you jump on IRC, it's dead. And if you can ever get somebody, it's usually a response of like, well, I'm not going to tell you. You need to pay me for this. And that's like the antithesis of what the hacker community was all about when I was starting off. So I encourage the collaborations with people you know or meet somebody you don't know and do something good in this world.
You know, you talk about what the next thing might be. And yes, let's not duplicate efforts. Let's do different things. I want to know more. I want to know more about what these people are doing. You know, I want to know what cars they're driving, where they're staging. I mean, really, these people, they go around with masks. They go around with unmarked vehicles. They go around in military outfits. You know, it's like an invasion. You don't know where it's coming from. And I think that's how it's designed. You're supposed to be afraid. You're supposed to just comply. And we have people power, and people power is the biggest enemy of this kind of thing, because we have knowledge, we can share information, and they hate that. They hate that so much. Just today, in fact, I saw a story in one of these papers called The Patch, which seemed to exist everywhere, and this has to do with the fire department out on Long Island. Tensions flaring after ICE agents parked at a Long Island fire department in a predominantly Latino area as immigrant detention soar. What they're doing is they're staging in the local volunteer fire department, staffed mostly by Latinos, who are subjected to the whims of these ICE agents that do God knows what. This was discovered, and there's a whole big thing now in Brentwood, New York, about who are these people? Why are they here? Who's letting them do this? And that's not what they want. They don't want to see their cover blown. And I think it's really important to democracy to let people know what they're doing, you know? What are they driving? Where are they going? Where do they park their cars? Not for vandalism or anything like that. I don't think I've ever heard anybody that, you know, we've talked to, push for that kind of thing. For knowledge, so that you know where the threat... You know where the police precinct is, right? You know where the cop cars come from. So you should know where these things come from. But that's my feeling there. Joshua, what I'd like to ask you, though, because you mentioned... you were talking to all the media. You mentioned Newsweek, and I'm looking right now at the Newsweek headline, which is "ICE Block App Maker Compares Immigration Agency to Hitler." you're at danger of that kind of a headline appearing because that's what they focus on. What kinds of experiences have you had with the mass media? Have you talked to all of the mass media, or are there some you won't talk to?
No, I'll talk to anybody. I welcome it. You know, if Hannity wants me on his show and he wants to, you know, tell everybody how I'm, you know, horrible, I'm a terrorist, I'm doing these horrible things, go ahead. I'll argue with you all day long. You know, I don't have a problem going up against anybody. But as far as me comparing to Hitler, I mean, don't we kind of see those comparisons? I'm not shying away from that at all. I totally compared him to Hitler, and I totally compared ICE to the Gestapo. And that's what's happening, because what do we look at when we know our history? When Hitler rose to power in Nazi Germany, what most people know is the Jews were rounded up and put in concentration camps, right? And it was horrible, whatever. But it didn't start like that. It started 10 years previously, as he was rising to power, with, you know, hate people who don't look like you. Let's demonize the immigrants, right? And that's exactly the Trump Project 2025 playbook. This is why Russ Vought is in a position of power. He's the architect of Project 2025, if you don't know. And so now we see the ICE agents sitting outside of elementary schools and rounding up kids. We've got five-year-olds in court with, you know, immigration court with no representation. We're arresting college students for thought crimes as if we're in Minority Report. And, you know, what, 2 days ago there was a headline about a pregnant woman that they're taking away and disappearing. And they're taking babies out of mother's arms. I mean, I could go on and on and on. But isn't this exactly what the Gestapo did in Nazi Germany? Isn't this how it all starts? So, yeah, I'm not shying away from that at all. We're watching history repeat itself almost to that 100-year mark on the nose.
You know, it calls to mind one of my favorite authors, J. Michael Straczynski, was talking about this very subject back in the 1990s. And he said it's never the villain with the, twirling mustache or, you know, the elegant way of speaking, you know, the ultimate villain. It's always the person at the corner shop, the guy who makes your sandwich, the person at the gas station. Those are the ones that actually turn into people who hate, people who will turn you in, people who will target your family. And it just grows, it festers, and it turns into something much, much bigger. And I think that's what you're focusing on as well. And it really needs to be exposed to the light.
Well, they say, I'm going to screw it up. I'm going to screw up the statement, and I'm not going to remember who said it. But it's like when fascism comes to this country, it's not going to come, you know, wearing the Nazi, you know, uniform. It's going to come holding the American flag and mm-hmm. screaming patriotism. Right. And that's exactly what they're doing. They have their minions, their MAGA people. Right. And they're just throwing gasoline on the fire every single day. Here's a great example. About a week and a half ago, all we heard was there's a 400% increase on assaults on ICE agents. And then all of a sudden it was a 500% increase. And then it was a 700% increase. I'm sure tomorrow it'll be 5,000% or something, right? I mean, whatever's going to stoke the most fear. The interesting part about that is the number is really 413%, just for your listeners to know. So how did they come to that number? So there's been 49 instances of assaults against ICE agents. Now, you ready for the time frame on those 49?
Okay.
4 years. In the last 4 years, 49. And some of those are as horrible as brushing your forearm up against an agent or patting them on the back. So it's all just rhetoric. It's all just stoking this fear and this hatred and just rallying up their base. But it's not real. Every day, it's something exponentially worse that you should be afraid of so that they can distract you from what they're really doing behind the scenes, which is making as much money and getting as much power as they possibly can while they decimate our federal lands and they hurt our immigrant friends and neighbors and they take your health care away. And the list goes on and on and on. And our Constitution is being thrown out the window and used as toilet paper by this administration.
It seems incredible to me that people just buy into this so easily. Yeah, I just thought it would have been more of a challenge.
Well, I mean, look what we did with the internet. We literally have just the most amazing technological thing ever in the history of humanity, and we use it for cat videos and porn. Right? So, you know, we didn't use it to connect closer to each other. I actually wrote this blog post back in my Rosenberg days. This is going back, you know, 20 some odd years now. And it was called Technology and God. And it really had nothing to do with God, but it had to do with, people connecting with each other. And this idea that the internet was going to bring us all closer together. You can be friends and have these amazing conversations with somebody all across the world in real time and look at how humanity is connecting with each other. But what has it actually done? It's torn us apart, right? What has happened is we're all in our own little bubbles, reinforcing our own ideas, whether or not they're valid or not. We're not connecting with other people. We're just getting more and more divided with more and more hate speech going between, right? I mean, this country has never been more divided than it is right now. And I loved your opening, by the way, with the uncle coming to Thanksgiving thing with Grok. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you get to have Thanksgiving every day with your crazy uncle now if you're on X. So this is what technology is doing to us. And remember, you know, when we're training an AI, for example, everything's got bias in it, right? So if Elon and his people that are going to, you know, adhere to his belief system are training an AI, of course it's going to become anti-Semitic. This is the guy who gave the Hitler salute twice, right? And so, I don't know. I mean, I could keep going on, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I also understand we only have 2 minutes left. Alex, quick comment, and then I want to give Joshua an opportunity to give some information out.
Yeah, sure. And this is more laudatory than anything else. I think the non-commercial aspect of this is so incredibly important. And you bring up the promise of the internet. Imagine if the platforms themselves created an app like this. And they're supposed to create these communities. They're supposed to bring us together. And yet they did not. You can go on LinkedIn. You can read a lot of sesquipedalian prose about the dangers of ICE and NGOs and individuals. But you know, this was individual action. This is direct action. You've been throwing sand in the gears. You've created friction here. You put yourself at risk. I think what you did was really laudable, as admirable, is, I think, extraordinarily brave. And I would love to see more of this. And I would love to see you hang around the hacker community a lot more.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. That's incredibly kind of you.
Joshua, we are just about out of time. Wanted to give you an opportunity to give out any kind of information that you'd like to spread with the public, and also invite you to join us at 8 o'clock on Overtime, if you have time. We'll be continuing the conversation there on YouTube.
Absolutely. I'll totally be there. I would just say, as far as information, iceblock.app is the website. You can see some press articles. You can see some of the video interviews that I did. And there's a link to the App Store so that you can download this app.
Okay. We've been speaking with Joshua Aaron, the developer of the iceblock app, which if I have to get an iPhone, maybe I'll do that to be able to see this thing in action. But it's just another indication of how people are fighting back in the world of technology. Please support WBAI. That's the station you're listening to right now. And we have conversations like this all the time, but we only do it with your help. Give to WBAI.org, buddy.WBAI.org. There's a bunch of different websites and ways to support the radio station. The important thing is keep us going on the air without commercials. We've been doing it since 1960, and we'd like to continue for just a little while longer. We will be back again next week, 7 p.m. on WBAI, and again, 8 o'clock on YouTube. See you there.
I swear by Almighty God.